Samuel said to the people, "The Lord is witness who appointed Moses and Aaron and brought your fathers up out of the land of Egypt. Now therefore, stand still, that I may plead with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous deeds of the Lord that he performed for you and for your fathers. When Jacob went into Egypt, and the Egyptians oppressed them, then your fathers cried out to the Lord, and the Lord sent Moses and Aaron, who brought your fathers out of Egypt and made them dwell in this place. But they forgot the Lord their God, and he sold them into the hand of Sisera, commander of the army of Hazor, and into the hand of the Philistines, and into the hand of king of Moab. And they fought against them, and they cried out to the Lord and said, 'We have sinned because we have forsaken the Lord and have served the Baals and the Asheroth. But now deliver us out of the hand of our enemies that we may serve you.' And the Lord sent Jerubbaal and Barak and Jephthah and Samuel and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and you lived in safety. And when you saw that Nahash, the king of Ammonites, came against you, and you said to me, 'No, but a king shall reign over us,' when the Lord your God was your king. And now behold, the king you have chosen, for whom you have asked, behold, the Lord has set a king over you. If you will fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, and if both you and the king who reigns over you will follow the Lord your God, it will be well. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then the hand of the Lord will be against you and your king. Now, therefore, stand still and see this great thing that the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest today? I will call upon the Lord that he may send thunder and rain, and you shall know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord, and in asking for yourselves a king." So Samuel called upon the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. And all the people said to Samuel, "Pray for your servants to the Lord your God, that we may not die, for we have added to all our sins this evil, to ask for ourselves a king." And Samuel said to the people, "Do not be afraid. You have done all this evil, yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Do not turn aside after empty things that cannot profit or deliver, for they are empty. For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you a people for himself. Moreover, as for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you, and I will instruct you in the good and right way. Only fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart, for consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king."
This is a very different experience for me. I'm not used to this kind of place and so many people. I see you have an ox cart here without wheels. It makes me feel at home. Mine doesn't have wheels right now either. I understand that you've been hearing from Samuel about what's been going on in Israel recently. I'm grateful for this opportunity to share with you some of my perspective on those events. Now, at this point, people would ordinarily introduce themselves by name, but my name's not really important to this story at all. It would hardly be recognized by anyone. It's not that I don't have a name, it's that I'm known by what I've done and who I've been associated with. You see, I'm not a very important person. More often than not, people refer to me as young man, servant, and that's fine with me. From what I've seen over the last few years, I think I'd rather be a servant than even a king. Have you ever stopped to think about how many people will even recognize your name 100 years from now? Do you think you've done something of such significance that someone not in your own family will even be able to recall it a couple of generations from now? I suspect that if anything at all is recorded about me in history, It won't be that my name was something like Eli or Jacob, but that I was a servant to the first king of Israel. In fact, before he even became king, and I played a role in his becoming king. The king I'm talking about, of course, was Saul, son of Kish. And it all began with a fairly simple, although not trivial, task that needed to be done. Who would have ever thought that such an errand would lead to all of our lives being changed forever? But then, you know, we never know when we set out on a path on any given day where that path is eventually going to lead us. The day that I'm speaking of was quite a few years ago. I woke up one morning and our donkeys were missing. Now, that's a fairly serious thing if you make your living by farming, as we did. My master, Kish, sent his son Saul to search for them, and he asked me to help. We live in Gibeah. Now, you might not recognize where that is, but it's 6 miles or so north of Jerusalem. I think you know that. Jerusalem wasn't part of Israel in those days. It was still controlled by the Jebusites. Our land was divided by a series of hills and mountains that ran right down the middle of it. And in our region, those mountains were over 3,000 feet high, and that made getting around on foot somewhat difficult. But it gave us more rainfall for our crops. We set off walking towards the north, towards the hills of Ephraim. And we wandered from village to village over the course of a couple of days without anyone giving us any information about our lost donkeys. After a couple of days, Saul became concerned that his father would be more anxious about our whereabouts than about his animals. But I didn't want to give up yet. I knew that a man of God lived nearby there. His name was Samuel, and he was known as a prophet through the whole land of Israel. But you know that, don't you? You've been hearing from him. He wasn't just a prophet. He was the judge of Israel. He was the man, if people had a dispute or a problem that they couldn't resolve, he was the man that they would go to as last resort. Now, people didn't normally go to him with a problem of lost donkeys. But since we were nearby, I figured it would be worth a try. Saul wasn't so excited about that. He said, you know, even if he could help us, we didn't have anything to give him in return. And that's what you were supposed to do when you went for help from a prophet. We'd used up all our provisions in the previous 2 days wandering around and finding nothing. But I still had a small silver coin left, and I convinced him, let's go, it's worth a try. So we headed off towards Ramah, Samuel's hometown. And as we were approaching it, some girls were coming out of the village, and they told us that Samuel was supposed to be offering a sacrifice at the high place that day, and we might be able to find him there. So we wandered through the village and started to go up towards that. And who were we to meet but Samuel himself? We thought, this is a really fortunate circumstance. You know, looking back on it from our perspective now, I realize that it was no accident. God was working all these different events out for his purposes. But I need to fill you in on something else that was going on at this time. You see, Samuel was getting on in years. He was quite old. And all the elders of the tribes of Israel came down one day to meet him because they were really concerned about what would happen if Samuel were to die. It turned out that Samuel's sons were real scoundrels. They didn't take after the good example that his father had set. Samuel had been instrumental through his prayers in rescuing us a number of times from the Philistines. But now the Ammonites were threatening our people on the other side of the Jordan. And our elders decided that it was high time that we had our own king, like all the people around us. We needed a king to lead us. That really bothered Samuel. He was really upset about it. He felt that the people were turning away from God, that he should be the one that they looked to. But God revealed to Samuel that he was to go ahead and give the elders what they asked for. So while Saul and I were wandering around looking for our donkeys, God was telling Samuel that he would send him a man from the tribe of Benjamin, and he was to anoint him as the new king of Israel. Of course, we didn't know anything about this at the time. When we met Samuel, he didn't seem surprised at all to meet us. And before we could even say anything about our donkeys, he told us that we needed to go on ahead to the high place, and he would meet us there and have dinner with us. He also said that the next morning he was going to tell Saul about all that was on his heart. And oh, by the way, he added, "Don't worry about your donkeys. They've been found already." What? We hadn't said anything about our donkeys. How did he know about them? And what was it that he was going to tell Saul the next morning? You know, there was another name that we used for a prophet like Samuel. We would call them seers. And it struck me how appropriate that name was now that I saw him, because he seemed to be able to see things that ordinary people couldn't see. Saul was even more surprised by this than I was, I think. I don't think he came along on this side trip because he really felt the prophet could help us find our animals. I think he came along to humor me. But now he was having a change of mind. He had met someone who seemed to be able to read his mind and know what he was thinking, but who also treated him as if he were a very special person. And that treatment continued when we met for dinner. And so Samuel gave him a large portion of meat and treated him as if he were the guest of honor. We had come here to Samuel's hometown in hopes of being able to meet briefly with him and have him point us on the right way to finding our donkeys. We were going to give him a little bit of remuneration and be on our way. And now here we were, having a sumptuous dinner with him. And after the dinner, he invited us to stay overnight at his home. Whew, that was a whole lot better than sleeping under the stars on the hard ground the last couple of nights. But I went to bed thinking, what am I to make of all this? The next morning was even more mysterious. After breakfast with Samuel, he walked us to the edge of town, and then he had Saul send me on ahead out of sight and hearing so he could have a private conversation with Saul. I was tempted to sneak back within earshot so I could hear what was going on, but I felt better of it. You know, trying to pull the wool over a prophet's eyes or ears just didn't sound like a very wise thing to do. So I waited for Saul, and when he finally caught up with me, there was something different about him. And it wasn't just the fact that his face looked like he rubbed it down with some oil recently. That wasn't it. You know, Saul was a pretty imposing guy to look at. He stood nearly a head taller than most people that I knew. But I had never felt that Saul was a person who had a whole lot of drive and determination about him. Why, yesterday I had to convince him to keep on looking for the lost animals. He was more concerned about getting home and relieving his father of some anxiety than completing the task we had set out to do. I never really saw Saul as someone who I would call a born leader. But here he was, radiating confidence, as if he had some new sense of purpose about him, as if he expected some things to be happening. And some things did happen on our way home. A little ways down the road, we met a couple of people that were coming that lived near our hometown, Gibeah. And they told us that our donkeys had been found, just as Samuel had told us. And that now Saul's father was anxious about our whereabouts. What had happened to us? It had been 3 days. As we went on towards Gibeah, we met three other men who were going to Bethel to worship. And out of the blue, they handed us 2 loaves of bread. We didn't even ask. I mean, they just gave them to us. It seemed awfully peculiar. But Saul, again, acted as if he was expecting these things to happen. It made me wonder, what on earth had he been talking about back there with Samuel? What had gone on? I was really convinced that something strange was happening when, as we approached Gibeah, we ran into a large group of prophets. Not something you see every day. Saul just blended right in with them, joined them, started prophesying himself. Not that I'm an expert on that kind of thing. There were people around who recognized Saul as Kish's son, and they were saying, has Saul become a prophet now? You know, just the day before, I had to convince him to go ask for help from a prophet, and now he seemed to be one himself. This was really strange. Well, when we finally got home, Saul's uncle found out that we had actually met with Samuel. He was very interested. He asked Saul what Samuel had told him. And Saul just said, oh, he told us that our donkeys had been found, and that's why we came home. He seemed to be keeping his private conversation with Samuel very private. I was eager to find out what it was all about still. But things didn't stay private for much longer. Samuel called an assembly of all the tribes of Israel, and he made it clear that his intent was to choose the person who was to become the new king of Israel. Samuel cast lots among the tribes, and the lot fell on our tribe, Benjamin. And then he cast lots among all the clans of Benjamin, and the lot fell on Saul's ancestral family. And then he chose one man out of that entire clan. And the man he chose, you got it, it was Saul. So that's what Samuel had been doing back there in Ramah. He had been secretly telling Saul that God had chosen him to be king of Israel and had anointed him with oil. Well, if people were expecting something dramatic to happen now that Samuel had chosen a king for them, they were probably disappointed. Samuel went on to spend the next couple of hours explaining the rules and regulations for how their king and kingdom would abide under their new king. And when he was done and had written it all down, Everybody packed up and went home, including Saul. Some men who were pretty well known for their prowess in battle followed Saul home. I guess they were expecting him to take the lead in our conflicts with the Philistines and the Ammonites. But there were other men who jeered at him and said, "How is this fellow going to save us?" I forgot to mention, when Saul was chosen, he was nowhere to be found. They found him hiding behind the baggage that people had brought along to the assembly. So I guess he didn't make a very good impression on them at first. But Saul wisely ignored those jeers and rebukes. After all, how does one begin to be the king of a country that has never had a king before? Especially when you didn't even ask for the job in the first place. To tell you the truth, from what I knew of Saul's family, the one who I thought was most likely to be a leader was not Saul, but his cousin, Abner. Not that I was too fond of Abner. Maybe that's why Abner's father was so interested in what Samuel had been speaking to us about earlier. Maybe he'd heard about the banquet and about the way Samuel had given great respect to Saul. Well, nothing much happened for a while, and you probably wouldn't have known that Saul was the new king of Israel from what was going on around Gibeah, except for this group of he-men that were following him, hoping for him to take some action. But then, one day, some messengers came from across the Jordan, from Jabesh-Gilead to be exact. And they looked haggard and really distraught. And when they told us their story, it was clear why. They had been attacked, their city had been attacked by the Ammonites. And they were threatened with destruction unless they agreed to an onerous treaty in which every man in their city was to have his right eye put out. It makes me shudder to think of it. Saul had been out in the field, as was his custom, plowing. And when he came back in and understood what had gone on, he took his team of oxen and he butchered it right on the spot, cut it to pieces. And then he called those men who had been waiting around for him to do something as king, and he gave them the pieces and sent them out to all the tribes of Israel and told them to assemble as a man as soon as possible at Bezek. Or have your own teams of oxen butchered just like that. We were a bit shocked at what Saul had done. But, you know, it was something like what seemed to have come over him back when we met Samuel that day. He just seemed like a different person. But this time, it seemed to stick. And the people responded to his command. Saul took the army that assembled underneath him at Bezek and went and attacked the Ammonites at Jabesh-Gilead and routed them, saved our people. And he even showed some pretty good military skills in the process that impressed everyone. There were some hot-blooded young men who now decided that all those people who had ridiculed Saul back when Samuel had chosen him to be king, they needed to be put to death. How dare they do that to Israel's king? But Saul wisely again declared that this was a time to rejoice in the deliverance that God had given to his people, and not a time for such petty retribution. Everybody was pretty impressed by all of this. And when Samuel asked the people to reaffirm that Saul was their king when we returned to Gilgal, there was an atmosphere of excitement and celebration. Why, it seemed as if God had given us the king our elders wanted after all. I was feeling pretty good about all this myself, too. You see, in a few short weeks, I had gone from being servant of a moderately well-to-do landowner in Benjamin to being servant of the king of Israel. Everything was just going fine in my book. We had had a great victory over the Ammonites. Saul had acted convincingly regal, but he was unpretentious. And the people responded with genuine thanksgiving, and they offered appropriate sacrifices in thanks to the Lord. We were celebrating and having a great time, what with all the good news that we'd heard. And then Samuel, the prophet, stood up in our midst, and he called for our attention and began to speak. We figured that we were going to hear a rousing message about how great the God of Israel is, and if you follow him faithfully behind his new king, that he will lead you to victory over all your enemies. But his speech wasn't quite like that. He started off on a very somber tone. He told us, "See, I've given you the king you wanted." But he didn't say that with any enthusiasm at all. He made it clear that he felt that their demand for a king had not been the right thing. He went on to talk about how old he was getting. The weight of his years of service to Israel seemed to hang heavily on his shoulders, and they drooped down. He seemed to have aged significantly just in the short time that I had known him. But then he pulled himself up and he challenged every person there in that assembly. "Show me one time that I have ever been unfair in any of my dealings with any of you while I've served you as judge." And no one stepped forward with any complaints to make about Samuel. They had plenty of complaints to make about his sons. Then Samuel went on to talk about the history of our people. Back from the time that we were enslaved in Egypt all the way up to the present. And he reminded us of how many times our fathers had cried out for deliverance to God from those who oppressed them, and how God had always come through the means of one leader after another, Barak and Jephthah and Samuel himself. And he pointed out why they always needed deliverance time after time. It was because they forgot about their God and went and served the gods of the nations around them. It was the same story every time. They began to act like the nations around them. Things would go from bad to worse. And then they would cry out for forgiveness and deliverance, and God would restore them, and things would begin to get better, until they abandoned their God again. Then Samuel delivered the charge that we were all expecting, that our people had heard many times from many different judges in the past. But Samuel said that this was going to be different. You see, there was not going to be any more Barak or Jephthah or Samuel. There would be no more judges to lead them. They were going to have to deal with the king that they wanted so badly. And then he declared, "If you fear the Lord and serve and obey him and do not rebel against his commands, good. But if you do not obey the Lord and you rebel against his commands, his hand will be against you as it was against your fathers." That was classic, brief prophet talk. And it really put a damper on the crowd. Their mood went from festive to what I would call solemn. But you know, the trouble with people's attitudes about messages like that was that they had heard those messages too many times. And it was always easier to forget the bad part, the part about God's hand being against them if they didn't follow him, than the good part, when things were going well like they were right now. But Samuel wasn't about to let that happen this time. Samuel called out to God and he said, "Lord, send thunder and rain on these people." That hit us like a lightning bolt. I'm sure the same thought raced through everybody's mind. "Samuel, what are you saying? What are you doing? Why are you doing this to us?" The last thing we needed at this time was a thunderstorm. Samuel had cried out to God on a previous occasion, and God had said thunder to frighten our enemies, the Philistines, and rout them before us. But this was the time of the wheat harvest, and a heavy rain would beat down the crop and drench it and make it difficult, if not impossible, to harvest it. But Samuel seemed to think that it was important that God give us this object lesson to drive home the message that even though he'd given us the king we wanted, given us victory over our enemies in battle, he was not at all pleased with the reason we had demanded that king. You see, in just one single victory in battle, we had managed to convince ourselves quite easily that God must be very pleased with the way we were living. And our request for a king, well, it must have been the right thing at the right time. Look at the results. We won. Well, whether or not it was God's intention for them to have a king, Samuel made it very clear that the reason they demanded a king was very wrong. Our elders wanted a king so they could be like all the nations around them and have a king to lead them. And that's why Samuel found it so wicked. But our God was different than all those gods, those false idols that they worshipped of those people around us. And he wanted us to be different too. He wanted us to trust in the Lord for leadership. And I guess God felt it was important enough that he was going to make life a bit difficult for us for the time being with that thunderstorm in order to teach us a lesson that we really needed to learn. Something like a father who disciplines his children when they've done something wrong so they don't get into worse trouble later on. You know, I believe that God did really intend for his people to have a king after all. He had spoken of it in the law that he gave to Moses hundreds of years earlier. It wasn't as if he just changed his mind suddenly and intended to have his people ruled in a different way. I think it just wasn't his time yet. But because the elders had demanded this from him, he was willing to give them the kind of king they wanted in order to teach them a lesson about trusting in God and waiting on His time. When that thunderstorm struck, everybody's mood went from solemn to desperate. We cried out to Samuel, "Please pray to God that He won't destroy us, that He won't destroy our crops. We know we've done a horrible thing in demanding a king like this so we could be like the other nations around us. Oh, forgive us." And that's what Samuel wanted to hear from us, I think. Because his tone changed now from condemning to consoling. He told us, "You don't need to fear, even though you've done such an evil thing. You need to be careful to follow and serve the Lord with all your heart, and not to seek after those things that your neighbors might be doing who don't know God and don't worship Him as God. God will always be there for you. He called you to be His people, and He will not abandon you for His great name's sake." You know, something happened to me that day in that thunderstorm, listening to Samuel's words. I had had this simplistic concept of God. I saw Him as some powerful remote being who would occasionally do amazing things for us, His chosen people. But I always kind of thought we were more His slaves to do His bidding than people He really cared about. If we behaved well, He made things nice for us. If not, He made them difficult. But I was beginning to see that He was doing these things for us, for our benefit, for our good, not for His own. He didn't need anything from us. He was trying to teach us that we should love and serve Him with our whole heart and not seek after those things that other people sought after. That if we did, those things would do nothing but lead to trouble and ruin for us, even though on the surface they might seem to be pleasant and desirable. Worse yet, they would take us away from following the Lord, the only true God who actually cared for us. God was different than the gods of all those other people. They served their gods and offered them sacrifices because they felt that in doing so, they would keep their gods from getting angry with them. Or it might convince their gods to do something for them that they wanted. But the only emotion that could be associated with their relationships with those idols was one of fear. We served the living God, a God who loved us and wanted us to serve Him because we loved Him, that it was something we did out of the desire of our hearts. I made the decision at that moment to serve God the way Samuel had asked us to serve Him with my whole heart, as best as I could. And I knew I would fail Him. I knew I would make mistakes. But Samuel's words and even the tone of his voice gave me comfort when I thought of that. Because our people had failed God many times, but God was still there for them. He had given us the law to show us what the way to a good life was. And He would always love us. And He was ready to forgive our failures as long as we were willing to admit to them. God knows we have failed Him for hundreds of years already. What He really wanted from each one of us was for our hearts to be His above all else. For us to be satisfied with the good things that He would bring into our lives, not the imitation of that, that the imitations of those good things that so many of the other people around us sought after. Well, a few moments before, I had been pretty happy about my circumstances, that I had been fortunate enough to serve Saul when he became king of Israel, and was looking forward to my prospects. But now I found myself committed to the service of a new master. I would still serve Saul as best as I could, but I would serve him for a different reason, because I was doing it out of love for my new master, the Lord, the living God. I could see that none of this was an accident, that God had been working out these circumstances in my life for His purposes. I was no longer a person that was serving someone in order just to make a living for myself, even if that person that I was serving might be a king. I had a greater purpose than that. I was serving the living God, a God who loved me and wanted what was best for me. It would be nice if I could tell you now that everything turned out fine from then on and that everyone lived happily ever after. But that didn't happen. You see, we still had our problems with the Philistines. Saul was able to raise a small standing army. And Jonathan took some of those men and attacked a Philistine garrison at Geba and routed them. But that just incited the Philistines, and they came against us in force at a place called Michmash. The men of Israel panicked, and they started to desert Saul en masse, so much for wanting a king to lead them into battle. Saul was waiting for Samuel to arrive before he took any action. And when Samuel didn't come, by the time that Saul felt was the appointed hour, Saul made the faithful decision to take matters into his own hand. And he went ahead and made the burnt offerings to call on God for help in our time of need. Samuel came just a few moments after he had done that. And to say that Samuel was upset would be an understatement. Saul had taken on himself privileges that only a consecrated priest should have. Samuel told him he had been very foolish for doing that, and because of it, his reign would not endure. I thought that was a pretty harsh judgment on a man who had just done something hasty when he'd been sorely pressed. But that's one of the reasons why I would rather be a servant than a king. You see, when you're in charge, your decisions have more impact. People looked up to the king. God wanted a man there who would serve him with all his heart. It hurt me to think that the man that I had served for the last few years might not be that man much longer. A lot more could be said about the battles that were fought and the other events of Saul's reign. But I don't think I'd go very far wrong if I were to say that Saul's greatest moment was his first act as king, when he led that hastily assembled army in victory over the Ammonites, and then he turned around and he forgave those men who had ridiculed him just a brief time earlier. Saul started off pretty well, but then he gradually began to drift off track. God wanted a man to serve him with all his heart. That meant putting pride behind and not trusting in your own devices. Seeking God's will and following it faithfully. Saul never seemed to grasp that. At least not entirely. He was more concerned about what other people thought, and especially what they thought about him. That's a lesson that we all really need to learn. Not to be so concerned about what other people think about us, but what God thinks about us. If the opinion of other people and the desire for other things mean more to you than God Himself, then you will have a very difficult time serving God the way He wants you to. And worse yet, you'll never really find true satisfaction in seeking after those things. And you'll miss out on the joy and peace that God alone can bring into our lives. I'm more convinced than ever that it's easier to serve the Lord with all your heart when you're already a servant than when you're a king. Perhaps what Israel needs is a servant king. I'm thankful that you took this time to hear my story, and I hope you found it helpful.